You're tuned to Perspectives, a weekly public affairs show which airs every Saturday right here on KTEP. And joining us on Perspectives today is Adam Reed Tucker. Adam Tucker is an architect and he is the creator of Lego Architecture, the visual guide. Adam, tell us a little bit about Lego architecture. And first of all, how did you get started? Did you play with Legos as a little boy?
I did. I played with Legos and Lincoln Logs and Erector sets and yeah.
And Tinker Toys?
Not Tinker Toys. Nope. But I did play with a set called Girders and Panels.
I don't remember that.
I'm sure some of your listeners will know that set. That was big in the 70s, late 70s. But at any rate, yeah, I played with Lego when I was a young kid. And then, of course, you know, you get into high school and you're into sports, cars, and chasing girls, and Lego's not cool anymore. And so about 30 years went by where I was not playing with Lego. And as an adult, I was an architect looking for something new to do in my field. And it dawned on me one day that Lego bricks were interesting because you didn't have to glue them together or cut them, and you can create any model that you envision or that is in your imagination. And so I went out to a local Toys R Us, and I filled up 11 shopping carts.
Oh, my gosh.
At the expense of, I think, $8,500. And I dumped all the sets out in my living room, and I had to get reacquainted with the brick because I wasn't aware of these new colors and new shapes, and they had Star Wars sets now and Harry Potter sets. And when I was a kid, there was like 7 colors and maybe 30 or 40 different shapes. So Lego had really come a long way, and I had to examine the parts and see what I could do, what I couldn't do. And I found out that I pretty much could do anything as an architect and recreate pieces of architecture. And I started doing that, and then Lego took notice, and we formed a relationship. So I was their senior designer for the Lego architecture line and originated the line and did the original sales and the licensing and all of that good stuff that goes into producing a new line or product line. And now recently, DK has been on board to write this amazing book, and it basically showcases the last 5 years of our, you know, anniversary, if you will, of the 18 or so different models that we've produced.
You talked about the fact that you used to play with Legos, and you know, a lot of people who played with them remember them as bricks, and Lincoln Logs were made out of wood. Now they're made out of plastic. But they were bricks, and then the plates came along, and that made it easier, right, to make things a little bit?
Wow, I'm impressed. You've done your homework. Not a lot of people know that. Yeah, at first the Lego brick was a 2x4 block, and then it was renamed a brick, and then from there it was divided into 3 layers, which gave you a plate, and then if you take the studs off of the plate, you get a tile. So those are the 3 main components that make up the family of Lego elements is a brick, a plate, and a tile.
Now, the plate endured, but in the 1960s, Lego scale model series was kind of phased out, wasn't it?
Which line are you referring to in the 60s?
The Lego scale model series?
Well, you know what? That's interesting. That the history of Lego and Samsonite was a company that came in and did their model maker series, and then Lego actually did a series of professional kits for architects called Lego Architecture. And they only did 3 of those sets, and they were very vague and generic sets for architects to really use as a tool or an aid in designing models. Not too many people know about those. And then actually, Lego produced a series of sets called Modulex, and that was for designing factory layouts and site planning. And so now we're revisiting the world of architecture, and not a professional setting, but for people all around the world who enjoy architecture and design.
It's interesting, and I think our audience would like to imagine this. You bought 11 carts of Lego sets, and you dumped them all in your living room. And when you dumped them, did you do them box by box, or you just mixed all the bricks and plates up? And
I just dumped them all out and made a big pile, because part of my learning process, I had to analyze the different parts. So I didn't really care about the sets they came in or how they were being used. I wanted to look at it from a fresh perspective. So by ditching the instructions and the packaging and just having the raw parts in a pile, I spent the next few days just going through them and looking at them and, you know, seeing which ones I felt were useful. And coincidentally, what I learned was that the most basic shapes were the most useful shapes. So if I had some fancy cockpit from a Star Wars spaceship, I really couldn't use that part for anything else. So I kind of put that over into the pile of the not-so-useful pile, if you will. And then what I was left with was basically the parts that the Lego company was founded on, the basic squares and some circles, and it's just the iterations or the way you put those pieces together to create new forms. So that was an important exercise for me.
Now, you knew about this because being an architect, you kind of experimented. But when you see all these pieces, I mean, they're no longer bricks, as you mentioned. You have the canopies, you have a faucet, you have a cone, you have a lightsaber blade, a joystick, round tile, round plates, and then a vertical clip. And I think those clips would drive me crazy because I wouldn't know where to put them. So when you found out that you could work with these and the first design that you did you, as an architect, draw it out first, or did you just start putting it together?
Thank you for asking me that, because a lot of people assume computers design these models, or I do sketching, or this, and the other. I'm a little bit old school in that I like to scratch build things. So I don't use a computer. I don't do sketching. I just take the parts and I just start tinkering with them and doing study models, which to your audience, I'll explain what that means. Instead of designing the entire building all at one time, you'll take little sections and details, and you will explore those, examine them, and study them. That's why they're called a study model. If I'm not getting the proportion right or the scale right, so I tinker around. And for me, that's a lot easier to do with just the physical bricks. And then obviously at some point, the instructions have to be produced. And the way that that's produced is through a computer software. You know, we enter in the original design and then, you know, through some fancy algorithms, which I do not know about, it, you know, basically reverse engineers the model into a friendly instruction manual that you can use then to rebuild the model the way that it, you know, was originally designed in my studio. So
what you did with these 11 carts of Lego toys, and you brought them home and you started working on them. And then when you made your first architecture, first building, how did Lego take notice of this? Did you have it on display? Did you show it somewhere? How did this come about, Adam?
Yeah, I built a 6-foot-tall Sears Tower, and then I started buying more sets, and I built the Jin Mao Tower in Shanghai, and then the Empire State Building, and, you know, World Trade Center towers, and the John Hancock Center, and Marina City, and I started this small collection, if you will, of about 12 giant, you know, structures. And I was invited through an acquaintance online who, you know, said, hey, do you know that there's this Lego convention out in Washington? You should come and bring your stuff and show it off. And so I rented a U-Haul truck, I loaded it up with the buildings, you know, drove the 15 hours, set them up, and the day after I set them up, there were a couple people from Lego there, and they took notice and said, these are interesting, what are you doing, why are you using our product for this, and this, and the other, and I basically explained to them that I'm a professional architect, and I'm using their product to celebrate architecture, and they thought it was a very interesting concept, and they said, what if we reduce these down into a smaller scale and made them available to people when they travel around to these different landmarks? And that's really how the relationship, you know, was spawned.
You mentioned the World Trade Center, and of course 9/11 was recently the anniversary. What about that?
Yeah, so for me, you know, obviously it goes without saying, right? We lost 3,000 lives that day, you know, what is it, 343 first responders, and it was a, you know, a tragic day. That goes without saying. But We also lost some great architecture that day. And yes, buildings and cars can be replaced and people's lives and memories can't. But, you know, for generations and our children who are going to be learning about Twin Towers in a history book, it's not really, to me, it doesn't do it justice. So I wanted to recreate the Twin Towers so people could come and visit them in their original majesty and glory and learn not to be fearful of these tall buildings just because a group of people, you know, had a different idea for what they should do or what they, you know, what they should be served for. And so I wanted to raise awareness, and it's been a really heartwarming situation because I've actually had people come up to me and say, I lost someone close to me in the towers. Thank you for illustrating to me what these buildings once looked like. And they were able to understand that these are wonderful modern achievements by mankind, and we should continue that journey making great buildings. Not to be on a downer note there, because it's a very sensitive subject, but that was my motivation, or I should say that was my inspiration. The motivation then came from, you know, having to reinvent myself because my practice was suffering. So that inspiration of 9/11 coupled with the motivation of my practice, you know, was the genesis for innovating Lego architecture.
Now, tell us a little bit about Lego architecture. You mentioned, you know, when people go to these places and visit them and they can buy them. And you know, especially in Washington, D.C., when you go to the Smithsonian, you see a lot of gift shops and you see a lot of these there. Are these kid-friendly? Because a lot of people associate Legos with children, the Lego movie, Legoland. But this is something that's adult-like, very serious, but, you know, children can learn about the history.
That's a great observation. All right, so like anything in life, right, it's you get out of it what you put into it, right? So if you're a 10-year-old girl and you're interested in interior design and you see the Farnsworth model and you purchase that and you want to take the roof off and you want to, you know, move the furniture around and be creative, then it serves that purpose. If you are an executive and you, let's say, did some PR work for the Farnsworth house and you thought it would be a great gift to have on your desk in your office and it serves just a visual souvenir, then it can serve that too. So it's really, to answer that question, it's going to be up to the end user to determine what they want to take out of it based on what they put into it.
Another question I have is, you know, some people, especially as we get older, we tend to not have much patience, and we get frustrated with, like I said, puzzles or Legos, and then there are some people like my son who could just create these incredible things, and you go, wow, that's amazing. So when someone buys one of these kits, are the instructions very difficult, or you just have to, you know, be patient? Is something that you doesn't, is not built in a day or in 2 hours?
Instructions, the funny answer to that question is the instructions have to be very user-friendly. Otherwise, Lego's customer service department would probably be inundated with phone calls. So it's a very methodical, it's very user-friendly, it's very kid-friendly, if you will. You know, even some of my friends who don't have a lot of patience could easily, you know, build one of these buildings. And in terms of time to put it together, well, that's up to you. If you want to just, you know, if you're excited and you just want it done, you could probably do it in, you know, an hour or two. But if you want to truly immerse yourself in the experience, the booklet has a section in the front of the instructions that tells you the history. It tells you some facts, some interesting details, some original designs and drawings. So if you want to read that and study that and learn that, and then throughout the instructions, there's also little what I call cliff notes. They're little tidbits of information. So if you're working on, say, part of a cantilever or an interesting staircase, it gives you a side note of what the architect was thinking about. And if you're a 10, let's be honest, if you're a 10-year-old kid, you're probably just going to skip over that and find it to be a little bit, you know, too much. But if you're someone that wants to, you know, have a cup of coffee and really learn about Frank Lloyd Wright or Mies van der Rohe or Utzon, who did the Sydney Opera House, then you can take that experience as far as you want to take it.
Now, tell us a little bit more about how this book was put together, because it's incredible. It has different pictures of the various architecture. And it goes back to 2008 when you had the Willis Tower, the John Hancock Center. It goes all the way to 2014 with the Eiffel Tower, Marina Bay Sands, and Trevi Foundation.
Right, yep. Yeah, well, DK, you know, they put the book together. They did a wonderful job. I worked with, I believe, Philip at the time, who was writing all the narrative for the book. And so I was really responsible for telling the story of how this all unfolded, you know, since 2006, even though, yes, correct, in 2008 is when we originally launched the very first series. But I actually produced some test sets, and we only made about 1,200 of those, and that happened in 2007, so we could see if this was something that was marketable. So all of those little facts and fun introductions are a part of the book. And then throughout the booklet, it goes into each of the models, and it gives you basically a foreword. It talks to you about the Lego elements and how they were used and why they were used. And then it also gives you some facts and figures about the building itself. And we give you, like a real architect would have on his desk, we give you the top view or the aerial view. We give you the elevations. We give you some exploded views. So it shows you where the roof sections can actually come off. An interesting side note that's actually illustrated in the book is that the original concept for the Robey House was that there's 88 stained glass windows throughout Frank Lloyd Wright's masterpiece. And at nighttime, when you drive by the house, it's supposed to be viewed as a ship at sail and at nighttime finding its way. And so what I wanted to do was have a battery-operated tea light that you dropped into the model, so all of the windows actually glow or give off a sense of illumination. Well, long story short, for whatever reason, it just became impractical to include that feature. But we talk about the original intent, and that's something that's only discussed in the book. And like Falling Water actually comes apart, so it's an interactive experience. It's almost like an old Chinese puzzle box where you have to pull out this level and then you take off the roof to get to the second level, and it's sequential. And it's a pretty neat little fun, little additive that we put into that model. And the book goes into all of that. You know, for instance, the book illustrates how at the top of the Brandenburg Gate, there's actually a very ornamental sculpture of a chariot race, you know, a driver with four of his horse, and he's the horseman, and how we use little fountains from a sink set as the horse head and nose, and those clips that you referred to earlier as kind of his arms, and he's, you know, kind of, you know, wrestling in the horses. And it's one of these things where, you know, it's just it's capturing the essence. So when you look at the model, you're like, yeah, that represents four horses and a person behind them. But in reality, it's made up of some sink faucets and a clip and a couple plates. And it's amazing how your imagination kind of fills in those voids. So it's still Lego-esque, but yet it's still representing something that was significant to that building.
We are visiting with Adam Reed Tucker. Adam Reed Tucker is the Lego architecture creator, and we're talking about the book, Lego Architecture, the Visual Guide. It has various pictures of the different models that in architecture that Adam has been discussing. And we're talking a little bit also about, you know, what it takes to put these things together, the history behind it, and the fact that, you know, it's there's a lot of nostalgia now. A lot of people are starting to go back, you know, with the anniversary of the Beatles and Beatlemania, and they go to thrift shops to buy stuff. And Legos have been around since the 60s. And Adam has decided to create something with him. And of course, as I mentioned, he is the Lego architecture creator. Now, Adam, how do you go about deciding what building you're going to select or what area you're going to do for your next series?
There are so many factors, and some of which I'm not even privy to, but being a part of this process, it has to do with so many things. Are the parts available? Is the partner, the licensee, You know, what's their timeline for unveiling a product? You know, is this maybe too political right now in mainstream, even though it's significant in our history? Is, you know, can it be done out of Lego? Let's say we've got all the elements, but something like maybe the St. Louis Arch, which we would know we could probably sell a few of them. It's an interesting piece of sculpture, architecture, or it's actually a monument. But we actually haven't figured out how to use the Lego bricks in a correct way to replicate that arch. So there's so many different rhymes and reasons, and it's hard to say. There might be an anniversary coming up, or, you know, we haven't done anything in Australia. So, you know, let's do the Sydney Opera House. We haven't done anything in, you know, Britain or London or Singapore or Asia. Yeah, so it's not the criteria is honestly longer than a six-year-old boy's list for Santa Claus. It covers every angle and aspect.
We're visiting with Adam Reed Tucker. He is Lego Architecture Creator, and we're discussing the Lego Architecture, the Visual Guide. It's a beautiful book. It's beautifully boxed and displayed with some beautiful color pictures, and tells a little bit about Adam and the history of Legos. But we are enjoying our visit with Adam Tucker. Now, Adam, as you mentioned, that there are a lot of things coming up. Sometimes there's an anniversary coming up. And let's say, for example, in 2015, next year, will be the anniversary of the end of the Civil War and also President Lincoln's assassination. Would there be something to create like Civil War era or like the Lincoln Memorial, anything like that?
I can't answer that question. A lot of the product development that's currently going on right now is, you know, it's proprietary information, and there isn't an official press release. I can tell you that any and all anniversaries are looked at, and we uncover every potential possibility. And getting into, you know, something that would celebrate that anniversary would not be out of the realm of possibilities. But I didn't want to say no comment, so hopefully I...
No, that's good.
I gave you a little bit of a clue.
You did. Now... tell us about some of these 2014 models, architecture, the Eiffel Tower.
The Eiffel Tower. That was a collaboration of all of the designers. So we all kind of originally had a concept, and we shared it with the group. You know, it's an intimate group. There's only about five of us or four of us. And we basically took the best features of all of our different interpretations and put it together to create the Eiffel Tower that you see.
The Trevi Foundation?
The Trevi Fountain.
Fountain, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that was designed by one of our designers, Roque. He did a masterful job capturing the essence of the fountain and the structure behind the actual fountain and where the water comes through and the sculptures that encased around the water feature. And so that one he was able to knock out on his own. And then I did, let's see, the Leaning Tower of Pisa, I believe, came out this year as well. That one I kind of spearheaded the design, and that one was tricky to figure out how to intentionally lean it so it would not fall over. And there was a little trickery in that by creating the tower itself is actually built straight, and then the base that it's on we have tilted at a slight angle to create that distinctive illusion with the Leaning Tower of Pisa.
Ah, it's interesting. Marina Bay Sands.
Marina Bay Sands, that was a limited release, and I don't know all of the backstory to that, but that was released in a small run in Singapore to celebrate the architect who designed the Marina Bay Sands, because at that time, that building complex won an award, if memory serves. So that's really all I know about that model.
If you don't mind, I'm going to mention some of your partners, Steen Sig Anderson.
Yep.
Rock Sigolin.
Yep.
Kobe. And also John Christian Thomason and Michael Hepp.
Yep. Michael Hepp is an architect just like me. He was responsible for Villa Savoy. He did a wonderful job on that model. The other three gentlemen you mentioned all work for Lego. They're Lego employees. And Sten, I believe, has been with the company for 30 years. He is definitely their senior designer. So any time a design goes through its concept phase, Sten gets to analyze it and break it down and see with his experience if he can refine it to make it either more efficiently built or better structured. He basically gives it his final Lego of approval, if you will.
Adam Tucker is the person we are speaking with. He is a Lego architecture creator, and we're discussing the Lego architecture, the visual guide. Adam, a personal question, if you don't mind. Do you have children?
I have a 3-year-old son.
And he's already learning Legos?
Oh, of course.
And what has he built?
Oh, he helps Dad build all the time. My son is, he's wonderful to be around. Let's see, I'm working on a project now. It's a big office building, and it's very detailed, and it's very complicated. And he'll just come right up to me and start taking some pieces and putting them in the model as if they were meant to be there. And if I even try and remove it, he will give me a look like, no, Daddy, that's where it belongs. So he's definitely taking over my role, and it's great to see. And, you know, half the time he surprises me because his dexterity, and he's going to be a good little builder if that's what he chooses to do with his life.
What a great father-son relationship. That's awesome. And Adam, thank you very much for being with us today. We've been visiting with Lego architecture creator Adam Reed Tucker. And if you want to find out more about this, the name of the book is Lego's Architecture, The Visual Guide. Adam, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
We've been visiting with Adam Reed Tucker. Adam Reed, as I mentioned, is Lego architecture creator, and we've been discussing Lego architecture, The Visual Guide. Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer and producer, Norma Martinez. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Luis Sainz.